Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I was joined by Nicole Farrow, a relationship and family coach, to discuss professional help during a divorce. Nicole is a certified Robbins Maddens coach. She's an NLP practitioner and member of Resolution, so she's well placed in guiding complex family and divorce matters to a harmonious outcome. She's one of the UK's leading mindset coaches, specialising in supporting divorcing parents and blended families, and is regularly featured across the media with a monthly slot on BBC Radio 5 Live. In this episode, we look at different professionals who can help you navigate separation. We discuss the host of fantastic organisations and charities in this space, as well as which parts of the process you can actually do for yourself. We explore how to access support and where to find free information and low-cost options to help if you're on a budget. This is a really great episode full of expert insight, tips and advice to help you at whatever stage you may be and whatever budget you have to play with. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for making the time. Now, if people are going through a separation and navigating the different professionals who can help, it's quite challenging, isn't it, to pick the right person and to know who does what and where to get the help from. And there are some fantastic professionals out there, organisations and charities. And so in this episode, what we're going to cover is who they are, how to access their support, and where to find information or low-cost options to help if you're on a budget. So there are certain aspects of separating, as we know, where you don't need professional support and help, and there's others where it's perhaps wise to. And so getting the balance between cost and the value that a professional can add is going to be really important. So I'm really keen to hear from you about these topics. So why don't we start sort of at the beginning in terms of relationship support? And if someone is listening to this podcast and they're wondering right at the very beginning, is their relationship over, who is best placed to help them answer that question?
So for everyone, it's different, and there's not a sort of one size fits all, although obviously there are common reasons why people feel that they're in that position. And there are a lot of pressures, particularly at the moment with the cost of living crisis, that are seeing a lot more pressure on couples. In terms of understanding where you are and your relationship, there's definitely some internal work that you need to be doing and conversations you need to be trying to have with your partner. And, you know, divorce is sometimes inevitable, but always a last option. There is obviously the option to work with counsellors and therapists, either together or separately, if you need to kind of work through your own viewpoint and where you're coming from and what you're feeling at the time. There are also a lot of support groups, and there's also coaching. So you can look at kind of time boxing, if you like, in terms of number of sessions and having kind of a process that you're actually working through and tools and techniques that you're actively looking to do as an individual, but also as a couple, to try and get you to a certain point where you can make that decision, because it's a huge decision to make and you want to make sure that you've given it every chance to try and repair the relationship. But also, you know, how long's a piece of string? How long do you keep investing time and money until you kind of make that decision? What's your make or breaks, if you like? And no one can answer that for you, but there's certainly support out there in terms of working, as said, either on your own or with your partner, to come to that realization and decision around your relationship going forward. There's obviously a lot of resources in terms of books, but also I think, you know, finding support from others who were in that situation. one thing that I find with couples is it's really difficult to compare your relationship with somebody else's.
Yes.
And actually,
although we do try, don't we?
we do it a lot. And the other thing is with friends and family, which is sort of our go-to, but actually our friends and family aren't objective. They're not able to give you that sort of objective perspective on the situation and your relationship, because they have their own point of view, which will have come from their own experience of understanding you and your relationship, or their own even. So it's trying to find the right resources that are going to enable you to really look at your relationship with that other view. So your perspective, your partner's perspective, and then that wonderful third person objective. So sometimes that's easier. You know, there's a reason why people say it's easier to confide in strangers, because they don't know you and they can look a little bit more objectively. So it's finding that perspective and then deciding together if you can. But in reality, every separation, no couple is at the same point. And that's the hardest thing, I think, as a coach is and working with both sides, is that somebody has usually made that decision emotionally or mentally ahead of the other person, but trying to come to that together if possible, or if not, at least sort of making sure that you've exercised every avenue before making that choice.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you're saying there about people being in kind of different spaces. We have quite a nice little diagram on the Amicable website that shows that emotional journey, and it makes the point that very often the instigator, the person who's kind of bringing this up, is quite a way through that curve by the time they voice it. And the person who's hearing the news for the first time is way back along the curve. And the two sort of different types of emotions that are going on in those different spaces are quite a contrast. And you do need to give your partner time to catch up if you've been thinking about this for a while. But what I was also going to ask you about, because I'm super interested, is, you know, you mentioned you can go as an individual or you can go as a couple to work out whether the relationship is over. Now, is there a right answer to that? Is it better always to go as a couple, or is it better sometimes to go and do some preparatory work yourself first before then doing the couple work?
There isn't one answer, because every couple and every relationship is different, but it also really depends on the couple's dynamic. So if you have a dynamic in which perhaps the person instigating doesn't feel that they have the confidence or really know themselves what it is that they want, or have the confidence to voice it or be able to articulate it yet, then actually throwing yourself into, you know, couples coaching or couples counseling when you've instigated this, you've kind of opened up that can of worms, your partner is, you know, as you've just mentioned, emotionally behind you, but you're not really sure what the outcome is, or you haven't really kind of got it straight in your own head how you feel about it emotionally and mentally and what the repercussions are, then actually you're trying to deal with that other person's emotions before you've really had time to deal with your own, and therefore you're actually going to probably prolong the pain and the process in getting to a decision that's right for you and for both of you and you as a family. So actually having the time to get that space and that clarity, so you are a little bit clearer and being able to communicate that to your partner. And then, as you say, respecting the fact that they are going to be behind you. If you are trying to still work at your marriage, then expecting them to just understand how you feel and do the change that you need to see, and remembering that change comes from both sides, is actually sort of setting you up to fail and pushing you down the inevitable of we can't work this out. So it's about understanding what it is that you want, taking that time to realize that before you voice it. You don't have to have all the answers, but you have to have an understanding of what you want the outcome to be and what you're prepared to put in, and give your partner the understanding and the time to try and work with that, and then see whether you can repair the relationship. If you can't, then obviously then you're heading down a different route. And again, there needs to be a lot of understanding in terms of where you are emotionally compared to your partner.
And one of the other things that you was just triggering in my mind as you were saying that is there are different types of people, aren't they, involved in this? So you might be working with a relationship specialist yourself who isn't necessarily a couples specialist. So there's just a point of distinction there, isn't there, when you're looking at how you transition and who you need to help you. We get this a lot in the work that we do. If you are the facilitator effectively, you are going to be a neutral person. You're not on someone's side. You're not trying to deliver someone's messages. So if you've done some individual work, sometimes then going to couple work when you've already got an established relationship, that can be pretty tricky, can't it? So I think just understanding that you can work individually and you might then need to change and go to somebody afresh as a couple, that can be quite an important point.
Yes, and I would actually encourage that, because it's people and it's emotions. And, you know, even as an objective coach, you've still been able to understand more and build a rapport with your existing clients before then taking on their partner. And so, you know, you don't have the same understanding of that individual. You're not coming in afresh as professional as you try to be. You know, we're all human at the end of the day. So I think I have seen it where one partner has been in counseling or coaching and then introduced their partner to that process. And actually, I would agree with you that I think it's always better to start afresh. And you can still do the two in parallel if needs be. But in order to make sure that you have that really sort of space for both of you, and you both feel that you're on sort of a level playing field, which is then going to encourage the conversation and the level of vulnerability that you need to get to in order to repair the relationship. If your partner's feeling on the back foot because you already have an established relationship with your counselor or coach, then actually you're not setting off on the right foot going forwards anyway to where you're trying to get to.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. And what are some of the lower cost options in this kind of space then? Like, I know Relate have got a great website, haven't they? And I think they do a lot of kind of low cost options.
There are, you know, other charities like Relate. There are also kind of forums and communities. I myself have an app where it's more kind of that group coaching scenario where it's not one-to-one, but actually it's still the security, if you like, of strangers. If you know, you're not going to walk past them in the street, so it doesn't matter if you share, but actually you're still receiving that level of sort of coaching and support and the tools and things that you need, but at a lower cost option because it's not a one-to-one option. So there are a few different options that are available.
Oh, what's your app called, so people know?
It's called Kin app, and that facilitates that sort of group community, you know, coaching calls and techniques and tools and all that sort of thing, but without the one-to-one cost associated with that as well.
Brilliant. So if we get to the point where, say in our scenario, as we're working through on the divorce podcast, that we have decided the relationship is over and effectively we're moving to the next stage, what sort of help and professionals are there out there for dealing with the relationship breakdown itself? So you've decided it's over. What kind of therapy, what kind of support, what's out there for people at that point?
Yep. So again, there are coaches that can work with you either individually or together to support you through the process. And whether that's kind of on the emotional side or whether it's on the practical side, it's really arming yourself with the professionals that can help you to make some really, really big decisions at a time of quite heightened emotional stress. So, you know, we aren't able to make great decisions when we're in, you know, fight or flight mode, which is, you know, where we are in terms of our nervous system when we're in stressful situations. So it's anybody who can support you in creating that space to kind of make those decisions and give you the tools and techniques to just calm the waters a little bit and take some, you know, time. I think the other thing is that it can feel quite pressured and it can feel that everything has to happen instantly. We live in a very instant world all the time. You have to be available all the time. You have to respond all the time. And actually, the advice that I give to couples is to just sort of slow down. You don't have to rush through this. There is an emotional transformation that's got to happen as well as the sort of the legal side of things. And, you know, you need to be able to make the right decisions at the right time and not feel pressured, because then you're going to make the wrong decision with the best will in the world. So making sure you have the emotional support is really, really key. And again, coming back to, you know, you do need that support of friends and family, but please bear in mind that they do come with, you know, their own perspective. And, you know, I've been through my own divorce, and with the best will in the world, you know, I didn't always get the best advice from the people who cared for me most. You know, they mean well. So making sure you have the professionals on hand that can just sort of make sure that you're keeping focused on the end goal of where you're trying to get to and not getting down to the weeds of winning this particular battle. Does it really matter? It's just that perspective, which when you're feeling very stressed and emotionally charged, it's very difficult to do, and really, really vital for your own kind of well-being and future. But also that if you've got children as well, you know, they're going through that and you need to be emotionally resilient and strong for them. So, you know, you need to make sure that you have that support.
It's so fascinating, isn't it? This dual-edged sword of friends and family versus professional help, because you're right, you know, if you're on your knees and you just need a hug and a cuddle, then friends and family, fantastic and brilliant. But you're also right, because we know we run a big friends and family campaign with Amicable, just trying to separate out the sort of support they can give versus sort of the advice, because of, the, like you say, their own experience or because they have their agenda, which is obviously in support of you, the individual, but sometimes there's a much bigger picture. And in trying to protect and support you, sometimes it's a very fear-based reaction from friends and family, which can escalate things where there isn't a need to do that and can send you down routes that end up in a much more legalized and confrontational process. So it's really interesting to hear you say that, because it's definitely something we have a sort of similar experience on. I think this idea of having a team of people around you is sort of getting some traction now, isn't it? So there's obviously a balance, you know, in the best will of the world, you'd have lots of lovely people around you sorting out everything, but we're not all celebrities living in LA, living the life and can afford to do that. So what are the lower cost options around emotional support when you're going through a divorce or separation?
So again, it's looking for those communities and forums that can support you and being a bit careful of the ones you choose as well, because,
yes, you know, well, that's the point, isn't it? Because some of them are heinous. I mean, they're just, there's no other word for it. They're just horrible and they're full of people ranting about their exes. So how do you know what a good one looks like? Obviously, you can see that there's nobody ranting, but where do you go?
But it's also looking for that good advice and the positive advice. I mean, Facebook for one is the worst place to go if you're getting divorced. I've been on some of those groups and it is almost like sort of sharpening pitchforks, and you know, it's just the worst. It's the same as if you can keep looking at social media and following people who are, you know, constantly posting up lovely rosy pictures of their family and their love and, you know, their partner, and that's not what you need to be seeing at the moment. It's just really protecting your mindset and creating some really healthy boundaries for you. So as you say, surrounding yourself with the people who you need to be surrounded by, whether that's, you know, friends and family for the hug, or whether it's, you know, the solicitor for the legal part, or it's the emotional support in terms of sort of practical advice and tools in terms of a coach, or finding forums and joining, even just joining groups that are, you know, passions that you once had that you've kind of forgotten about, that just get you outside, and joining walking groups or starting back at the gym or painting, whatever it is, just something that is supportive of you emotionally, because it doesn't have to be focused around divorce and around what you're doing. It can also just be having some really new healthy boundaries in terms of protecting your mindset, but also just sort of starting to really tune in to what brings you joy. Because at the moment, when you're going through a divorce, you hang on to those. And, you know, if you have children and all of a sudden you've got this free time that you once didn't have, then, you know, make use of that by doing something that actually just lights you up for an afternoon or an evening. And it actually takes you away from your divorce, but just reminds you of who you are and rebuilds your strength and your resilience in terms of your identity. Because we can really feel it, that we lose some of that through a divorce. So it doesn't even have to be focused around divorce in terms of support. You can find that in so many other places by just, you know, spending time with your emotions, because the more you push them down, the louder they're going to get. So don't ignore them, but then just, if you need to cry, cry. If you need to run, shout, scream, do whatever you need to do. Obviously not at somebody, but let it all out. But then, you know, find those ways that are just going to help you get through, and just know that this time will pass. It is a grieving process. It's the same as if you lose a loved one. it will pass, it will get easier. Staying focused on where you're going and having the right people around you. So if you do kind of go off course a little bit, you know you can get back on and you've got that support. And it comes in many different guises. It doesn't have to be an expensive coach and personal trainer or whatever it is. It can be those low-cost options of just writing yourself a list of what calms you down. You know, every emotional state has a recipe. So if you know what makes you happy or what makes you feel calm, do more of those things and build them into your routine and start doing that for yourself. You know, take a bath, go for a walk, be in nature. You know, it releases endorphins. Go and join that club or do that thing that you've always been thinking about but putting off. It's all of those things that are low cost options that just keep you going.
I really like that. It's such a simple thing, isn't it? But you're right. What you focus on gets bigger, doesn't it? So if you focus on some of the things that build you up, that build your resilience, that remind you of who you are and what you like to do, just peppering those into your life becomes a real antidote to some of this kind of stuff. And you're right. It doesn't have to be an expensive coach or an expensive professional. It can be those simple things. I really like that idea of just, you know, trying to build the joy back into your life. And you're right, it is looking for the opportunities. Lots of parents in particular really feel the grief and the loss of not waking up and seeing their children every day. It's one of the hardest things to come to terms with. But if you can focus on putting back into that space some of the things that make you you and that you enjoy, it's not going to take that away, but it is going to help you build some resilience and remind you of other joys in your life as well, which I think is absolutely critical. It's about having some balance. So that's really good advice. And like you say, totally free, unless you've got an extremely expensive hobby that requires lots of money, I guess, then it's not necessarily free. But that's super. Now, when we go through divorces and separation, we know that there are sometimes that process of actually getting separated or divorced collides with a life event. And that might be health scares. It's, you know, there's been a lot about menopause recently and that triggering relationship difficulties and issues. It could be empty nesting. So life events and divorce can all come together, can't they? And they can have an impact on relationships in particular, and they can lead to separation and divorce. What sort of advice or what sort of help can you get if you are hitting a life event and you're not sure whether it's the life event or whether it really is the end of the road and divorce and separation are imminent? How do you navigate that kind of territory?
Yeah, well, it's a fact of life, isn't it? We're all living longer. And when we said those words, till death do us part, years ago, they didn't mean as long a duration as they do now. And there's a lot more life events that now occur during that time. And, you know, COVID was another one, you know, where people were suddenly having a different perspective on life and wanting different things. And again, I think it's about finding the time and the space to work through what it is you're going through. Explaining that to your partner in terms of, this is what I'm feeling. And communication is generally one of the things that tends to go out the window and what leads to a lot of divorces, which is why then co-parenting is so difficult, because communication's not there in the first place. But actually explaining, this is how I'm feeling. I don't have all the answers, but I just need some time and some space or some compassion in terms of while I figure this out. And then spending the time doing that sort of inward looking as, how am I feeling? Is this about this particular life event? What is it I'm scared of? Because often we try and resolve the symptom rather than get to the root cause. And that's what you're trying to find out. Is the root cause I'm unhappy in my marriage, or is the root cause I'm going through the menopause and I'm just really hormonal and I have different needs now that I need to explain to my partner and to realize for myself and find a different way of meeting those needs, because what was working before isn't working now. And we just need to adapt because we've changed, we've grown, we've got older, and the world has changed as well. The expectations are different. And I think it's also not helpful, the fact that we live quite disparate from each other now, in terms of we don't really share what's going on for us. We tend to go on social media and go, oh, everyone else has got it worked out and everything's perfect, and I'm struggling and there's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with my relationship or my marriage. And actually, most people are experiencing the same kind of problems and struggles. So it's finding ways to find those people and share those experiences. Again, there are lots of forums and communities, but it's also looking at yourself and what do you want? And again, getting that clarity before you make any rash decisions on what's the, you know, trying to resolve that symptom, what's the cause.
And I guess with life events, there's a whole bunch of people like sex therapists, holistic practitioners, those sorts of people who can probably help in this space as well, aren't there? In terms of being able to talk through what might be going on. So you can exclude things ultimately and come to a place where you can actually say, no, you know what, it is the relationship, or, you know, actually it is because I need to change my diet, my exercise routine, I need some supplements or whatever. So I think there are probably a whole range of professionals who can help at that point, aren't there, in terms of...
There is a specialist for everything these days, and there is the internet. They're all available. They're all out there. You just have to put the right questions into Google and generally you will get someone who is helping with that particular issue. And there are, you know, there's some brilliant coaches that, as you say, specialize in, you know, around the menopause or emptiness, or, you know, divorces that are happening later in life, or, as you say, health, nutrition. There's so many things that play a part. We are very complex, emotionally intelligent creatures, and often it's not one particular thing that can be compartmentalized. It's holistic. It's just getting to that root cause and finding some tools and giving that a try. And if it doesn't work, then it's a process of elimination sometimes.
Exactly. Now, one of the kind of big things about going through a divorce, obviously, is the pressure on finances. So when you're separating or divorcing, usually for most people, obviously, if you're super rich, that's not necessarily such a problem. And part of the problem with the celebrity divorce culture is we often see super rich people getting divorced in a very nice and pleasant way. But when there isn't a lot of money, it makes it a lot harder to stay amicable. So notwithstanding that, finances can be a major pressure on the relationship before a divorce, and they certainly are a pressure once you start to separate or divorce. So what sort of experts do people need to consult around the financial side of things? What do you normally see people doing?
Well, again, I think it comes back to that team. And actually the best way to save money in a divorce is to get the right team of people doing the right job. Because too often I see solicitors acting as everything, including the emotional support and the legal side of things and the finance side of things. And they have to charge in 6-minute increments. And every email that they send, every phone call that they take, they are charging you for. And actually, it's very easy to say, but not necessarily easy to do, depending on, you know, the dynamic of your relationship. But if you could approach a divorce like you were moving house, and you would say, right, I know I need to have an estate agent. I know I need to put fees towards that. I know I'm going to need a solicitor for this part. I know I'm going to need removal people. And they've all got their own specific job, and they all have a specific budget that's associated with that particular expertise. And if you looked at a divorce in terms of, right, I know I'm going to need some emotional support. I know I'm going to need a solicitor for this, but actually if I've got the emotional support to be able to do more of this myself and be in the right frame of mind, then I can reduce the solicitor costs. I know that I need to get to grips with my finances, my pensions, whatever it is, and I may need to speak to a tax advisor or whatever financial setup you've got. Finding out the information and having that to hand and getting your ducks in a row in terms of knowing where everything is and what everything is. And then also getting the support in terms of being able to communicate. And so this is the hardest part, I think, communicate with your soon to be ex so that you can try and reduce some of that hostility and actually work through some of this together if possible. But at least the moment you start sending emails and only communicating via your solicitor, your costs go through the roof. And it's only ever coming out of one pot, which I think people don't realize there's one pot, and all of your expenses and all of your fees and everything you're going to rack up in terms of money throughout this process is going to come out of that pot, and you're going to be what's going to be left is going to be divided. So it's in both of your best interests to make it as amicable as possible, to reduce the costs and to come out the other side as quickly and as cleanly as you can. And particularly if you've got children and you've got to maintain a relationship with this person going forwards, because once things are said, they can't be taken back. And with the best friend in the world solicitors, a very good way of writing some very difficult and quite triggering emails and letters. So trying to bear that in mind in terms of your long-term goal of making this as painless as possible for all involved, including yourself, but for everybody else, that's really how you can reduce the costs. And if you could, but again, it's being able to think like that and think clearly, which in the moment can be really difficult when you've got all of this emotion going on and you're living on your nerves and your nervous system is sort of really stressed. So it's making sure you have that team of people in place and you're going to the right people for the right thing that ultimately reduces the costs in the short term and in the long term.
Well, I think you're right. It's staying amicable. That's the biggest tip, isn't it? And it's not possible for everybody. And we should really acknowledge that for some people in difficult or abusive relationships, it's impossible to be amicable. And sometimes it's not the best strategy. But for many people, it is certainly the biggest cost-saving tip you can give, isn't it? If all things being equal, you're in a non-abusive relationship, the relationship has come to an end, you need to go your separate ways, then staying amicable is the most financially viable kind of way forward. And I guess within that, it's, as you say, it's keeping the communication open and doing a little bit of research to find lots of different solutions, because you don't need a solicitor to do a divorce anymore. You can do the divorce part on the government website yourself. If you needed to negotiate finances and children, there are lots of alternatives to solicitors as well, all legally binding just the same, but that don't involve creating two sides. Because that's the difficulty with solicitors. If you've got one, your partner needs one, that's double the cost. Whereas if you can work with couple services like Amicable, you have then only got one cost and you can share that between you. So I think it's being smart about those sorts of things. There are some things, as you say, like tax planning and some cash flow modeling and pension type stuff that you do need experts for. And if you've got big pensions, for example, and you're beyond 40, then really when you look at the size of your pension and the cost of an actuarial report, it's worth it, even though actuarial reports can be a couple of £1,000s. When you've got hundreds of thousands of pounds in a pension, getting the division of that pension wrong can cost you a lot more than you've invested in actually getting some proper help. So I think sometimes it's about weighing up, you know, what is the asset you're trying to divide and talk about? And is a bit of professional help actually going to pay dividends if you get that right versus getting that wrong? So I think those things, like you say, are really important. And you mentioned as well that need to stay on good communication terms, particularly when you're co-parenting. Let's talk a little bit then about how you keep your good co-parenting going, because circling back to life events, we know that one of the things that can happen is one person or one partner or another meets somebody new, and that then can bring up the whole issue of blended families, of, you know, how you tell your kids about a new partner and all of that kind of thing. Where is the help and advice if you find yourself in that scenario?
Yeah, well, again, there are co-parenting coaches like myself who will help with blending families specifically. But yeah, the quite often you find that even good co-parenting relationships can really be rocked by a new person coming in. And you know, 3 out of 4 people do go on to remarry. So it's quite common that, in fact, one of you at least, not both of you, will meet new partners and potentially even have more children or have stepchildren. So you're still a family at the end of the day. And that's the thing to always remember, is you have changed shape, but you're still a family. And at the end of the day, in the middle of the night, when you know your child's got a raging temperature or your teenager hasn't come home, the person that you want to be ringing up and know that they are just as upset and angry and worried as you is the other parents. And you want to be able to support each other and also provide that consistency for your children as well, because they do model relationships on what you show them. So making sure that you can continue to have that co-parenting relationship. And again, you don't need to have, you know, solicitors or going to court to have court orders or anything like that. In terms of child arrangements, actually a co-parenting plan is what most couples will use. And actually most courts don't really want to get involved in child arrangements. If they really have to, they think that the best place to decide those decisions are with the parents. And you can create a co-parenting plan in which you outline exactly how you're going to raise your children together whilst being apart as a couple, and include in that what happens about introducing new partners. And the best time to do that is during your divorce, ideally before anybody's met somebody new, or at least wants to introduce them. So you're coming at it with a level head as opposed to an emotional one, or if I've got this new relationship and love's a wonderful thing, but it can make us sort of lose our heads a little bit. So trying to do it at a time when actually that isn't an issue, so you can think about it really rationally and practically and what's best, and put that in a co-parenting plan is always my first advice to couples. In terms of when to introduce partners, how to introduce partners, you only get one shot at it. So it is not worth rushing it before everybody is ready. And also you need to think about how you would feel if your ex-partner had met someone new and they were introducing them to your children. The biggest fear that every parent has is losing their kids or being replaced. And these two fears re-raise their heads when a new person comes on the scene. So if you can show some compassion to your ex and let them know about this new person before your kids are informed of them, and actually even if possible introduce them first, so that when you do tell your children, mum and dad are on the same page, they're united, which is how I would encourage you to do the whole divorce. So from the moment of telling the children that you're getting divorced all the way through, you know, you're still parenting together, you are still their parents, you are still united. And that goes for introducing new partners too. So the acceptance of a new partner is going to go a lot better if mum or dad accepts them as well. And also what you don't want is this new beautiful relationship that you're having to have someone on the sidelines sort of throwing hand grenades into the mix. You want them on board. You know, you want to blend. You want to include this person who's very important to you into your life and include them in your family life with your children. So you want to set that up to be the, you know, to have the best opportunity to be a success and for you to all come together and to be able to share family occasions and enjoy those occasions together. So putting the effort in up front in terms of introducing them to your ex, letting your ex know, introducing them to the children, telling the children, putting some time and effort into thinking about how that message is managed. And also then when it comes to the first introduction, what I see a lot of is new person is introduced and staying for the weekend. And
all in one day.
And actually just meeting up for a coffee or a park date or a lunch, and then spending time with your children one-on-one afterwards, so they don't feel like they're losing their parent as well. Because again, from a child's perspective, new person's coming on the scene, oh well, that goes my quality time with mum or dad, because there's this new person there who I don't know, and they're gonna take their time away from me. So you have to think about people's fears and how they're going to feel about this, and reassuring them and going at a pace that works for everybody, not just you and your new relationship. Also really making sure that your new relationship is going to stand the test of time before introducing anyone, because you don't want a revolving door either. So it takes time. It takes some real thought, some conscious thought and effort in terms of making sure that everybody feels comfortable. And, you know, if this is a relationship that you're really invested in, then it's worth the effort, because you want them to get on and you want them to be included in the family and you to all be a family. So it's worth thinking about early on.
Yeah, I think the point you make is really valid, isn't it? That timing is everything, and just taking it slowly, one step at a time. And I know with the rejoinder to this as well, you know, what if I've given my partner plenty of notice, I've told them, but they're still telling me I can't introduce the children. And I always say to people, it's not about can or can't. You know, no one has the right to stop you, but it's about trying to understand what the barriers are, what the defences are, and trying to be able to have an adult conversation about those. And as you say, identify the fear, because with all of this, divorce and separation, the emotion that gets in the way and that creates so much trouble is fear, isn't it? And if you can crack the fear, you free yourself to make much better, braver, more collaborative decisions throughout the process, whether that's on finances, whether that's on co-parenting, whether that's on, you know, how you're actually going to do the divorce and which professionals you're going to use. But fear just seems to run amok in a separation or a divorce. And it, you know, whether, again, that comes into the friends and family advice, doesn't it? If we can find support to be able to conquer fears, we open so many doors. And that's what seems to be important. You know, like we're all telling our kids, aren't we? Oh, keep your options open. Do this, do that. Don't close down options. Don't close things down. And fear seems to close these things down. So it's been really interesting just understanding the different people who can help you banish some of that fear and really get to grips with your emotional life so that you can be your best person turning up in this very difficult situation and being braver and making some really good decisions. What's your final, going to put you on the spot here, any final tips or advice if someone's listening to this and wondering, you know, I've got a smallish budget, I need one or two professionals, I can't afford to go mad here. What's your tips and advice? What should people do?
I would definitely, if money is really tight, I would definitely look at the emotional support first. As you said earlier, you can actually do the legal part yourself. And really, it's getting into that mindset and emotional place that means that you can make good, rational decisions, because it's when you're not and when you're acting from a place of fear that things become really difficult, and being amicable, which is the only way really to save money, becomes impossible. So it's really investing in the emotional support that you need that's going to give you that support to be able to make those good decisions, because ultimately you want to come out of this as a whole person, and so does your ex. And taking chunks out of each other is just costly, both emotionally and financially. There was a good friend of mine who's a barrister, says that criminal solicitors see bad people at their best, and family solicitors see good people at their worst. And it's worth bearing that in mind. You know, if I had a pound for every time someone tells me they're divorcing a narcissist, you know, we're all capable.
Me too, yeah.
Of bad behavior when we're at a time of really, you know, we feel like we're losing something. And if we can just have the emotional support that enables us to also be compassionate to our ex and how they're feeling, I think we would be able to navigate this life stage, because it is another life stage, a lot better, and come out of it as a whole person and a whole family, just a different shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Whole family, different shape. I really like that, because that's what it is. You're right. This whole idea of putting our own oxygen mask on first allows us to grow into the role and allows us to be compassionate. Ultimately, we have to be able to see the other person's side of it. We have to be able to give them some of what they want in order to come out with a reasonable settlement and a future, whether that's how we share our children or how we share our finances. We have to be able to see the other person's part. And if we're so angry, hurt, upset, fearful, it's impossible to see the other person's side of things. And then we're only seeing half the picture. And all of the solutions we come up with are only doing half a job. And that's why we end up then going down very expensive routes with professionals whose job it is to almost create the conflict to protect us and so on and so forth. So I think you're right. I think it's just about making sure that if we have a little bit of money, this is an investment in our all of the family's future. And that's why it's such so important. But thank you, Nicole. It's been fascinating talking to you. I've really enjoyed it. It's all we have time for today. Tell us a little bit about where people can find you if they want to find out more or to take your advice on some of the co-parenting side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I've really enjoyed the conversation too. So you can visit me at my website, nicolefarrow.com. I'm also on Instagram, and the Kin app is available in the App Store for relationships and co-parenting for families.
Fabulous. Thank you. And of course, you can find me on X. I'm at Kate_daily and hear about new podcast episodes by subscribing for updates and visiting thedivorcepodcast.com or on your favorite listening platform. Thank you very much indeed, Nicole. Great to talk to you. And thank you, everybody, for listening.